Let's go to someone who has quite a way with words. He might have a view on this. Mark Latham, former Labor leader, joins us every Thursday for the first time in 2015. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, John and Gary.
What'd you make of those words?
What do you reckon, Mark? Have you got a lot of flap doodle for us?
Well, there's a lot of flap doodle around the place, isn't there, if you want to put your finger on it?
There sure is.
Sometimes we use stronger words than flap doodle in describing these things.
Now, there's been a lot of flap doodle about health costs lately following the Abbott government's attempt to slash that rebate paid to doctors for those so-called six-minute consultations. You've got your own ideas, haven't you, on how to cut that ballooning health budget?
Well, you get the biggest gains, not by making it harder for little old ladies to have a chat with their GP, which is the whole point of the Abbott government policy, but you get the biggest gains by cutting out irresponsibility in healthcare. Why should the taxpayer be subsidising affluent people who've drunk themselves into the ground and need a liver transplant, or those who've smoked their way to lung cancer? These are well-established bad health practices, and people who engage in them and they've got the money to pay, they should be funding their own healthcare instead of relying on the taxpayer. If you tackle that problem, you'd get budgetary gains 10, 20, 30 times greater than what we're talking about with the GP co-payment.
So if you were there, if you were health minister, you would just do what with, say, people suffering from diabetes because of they drank too much or they smoked too much? You'd cut assistance to them?
Well, you'd have to rely on GPs as sort of the gatekeepers in the system, and for the GPs to provide a health record with people. Say 5 years ago, they advised someone to stop smoking. One of their patients said, stop smoking, this is going to lead to lung cancer. That advice was ignored. Well, the person who ignored the advice and has now got huge expenses for their medical care, they'd have to pay for them themselves because they did the wrong thing. They were very irresponsible, and I don't think the taxpayer should be encouraging or funding irresponsibility in healthcare. This is the great blowout in the system. As medical technology has advanced, it's now very, very expensive to keep people going when they've got chronic health problems. Well, that's a benefit for our society, but should we really be funding those who've gone out of their way to actually inflict these problems upon themselves?
What about the big issue facing us right now, obesity?
Well, same thing. I mean, there'd be plenty of people who've been told by their doctor to lose weight, but down the track they've got obesity-related health problems. You could apply the same rule. It would act as a disincentive. If people knew that they couldn't drink, smoke, or eat their way into health problems, then obviously there'd be a massive disincentive, and you'd end up with a healthier population anyway. Your health costs would come down, and the taxpayer would have less to fund because people would know if you did the wrong thing, you'd end up funding it yourself.
A significant part of the issue, though, is also our ageing population and how long we keep people going, isn't it, too?
Well, there's nothing irresponsible about ageing. The whole point of good healthcare is to have an ageing population, and the new medical technologies are assisting that, so that's a good thing. But that, of course, is part of legitimate healthcare cost explosion, but we have to offset it somewhere. I mean, the federal government's right in saying that we can't fund the health budget growth forever, but they're wrong in the way in which they're trying to restrict that growth. They should be tackling the big ticket item here, which is irresponsibility in personal health care.
Yep. Now, in your AFR column today, you've talked about Man Monis, the lone gunman at the Link Cafe siege, and some of the cultural issues behind that, and you've got some interesting perspectives on that.
Well, like other people, I've been reading the debate about terrorism, particularly after the tragedy in Paris. And, you know, I read people like Paul Sheehan and Hendry Ergas earlier this week, and they're making a blanket assumption that Islam is synonymous with terrorism in all cases. Well, I think we need to appreciate that the Muslim community is quite diverse. And certainly in my experience in Western Sydney, say you take the example of the Fijian Indian community, that settled in Liverpool in the 1990s. They had a very strong attachment to private enterprise. They accepted Western values. They were great citizens. And you don't hear out of that community any talk of jihadism. Most of the problems come from the Arabic Muslim community, where there's no real attachment to private enterprise. There are attempts to, you know, live off government money, welfare dependency. And I think we need to target that particular problem, because that's where the jihadism seems to be coming from both here and abroad.
Can I just quote from your column, because this is it's very provocative, but you've dealt with this, and I'll just quote from what you've said here. You say, in my time dealing with them in Western Sydney, Arabic Muslim community leaders were different to other ethnic representatives, including Muslims from the non-Arab world. They had a lot of gripes and spent a lot of time trying to milk the system of government for material gain. They lacked strong work ethic and commitment to private enterprise. Not surprisingly, in the second and third generations, this group has produced a significant number of indolent, disaffected young men who find jihadism appealing. Unquote. That's your column today. It's pretty strong stuff.
Well, it's the truth as I found it. You know, I don't think we should have a misleading debate here. I don't think it's right for people to say that all Muslims are interested in jihadism. It is an isolated problem in one part of the community. We should talk honestly and openly about it, given the seriousness of the matter. You know, lives are at stake. Community safety is on the line here. So we should talk honestly about it. And my column and my recommendation goes on to say that the federal government could improve national security in the long term if it cleaned out Arabic Muslim welfare dependency in pockets of Western Sydney. You know, you've got young people there bludging off the system effectively, sitting around smoke-filled lounges, whinging about the West, in some cases talking about...
So what do you do with those people, though, Mark?
Well, here's
you ship them out?
The new Social Security Minister, Scott Morrison, get them into work for the Dole schemes, get them off their backsides and doing productive things in the community, because, unfortunately, the community we're talking about has found a myriad of ways, including disability support pension, to basically live off government income. And you look at the case of Man Morris, who also was part of the welfare dependency culture. So, you know, that's the thing that I find is linked. There's a link between the welfare dependency culture and jihadism, rather than the blanket assertion that all Muslims are synonymous with terrorism.
All right, we'll see what our listeners think of that, Mark. 13, 13, 32. Just a couple of things I want to quickly raise with you. Luke Foley's DUI conviction, do you think it's a mark against him?
Well, I think it is. Not the one back in 1993.
No, but the recent one?
Yeah, the one in 2007, when he was significantly over the limit. It's unfortunate. You'd have to give him credit for coming clean about it, but, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people asking, do we want a drink driver as the Premier of New South Wales? I was talking about irresponsibility earlier on. In the era of RBT, in particular, where there's no excuse,
yep.
You know, it's a grossly irresponsible thing to do.
19 past eight, and a couple of other quick ones I want to go into. Jonathan Agnew, the English cricket commentator, saying that Australia, by sledging on the field, had dishonoured the memory of Philip Hughes. What did you make of that?
Well, I was waiting for the first cricket commentator to use the memory of Philip Hughes to make some reflection on the modern game. I think, in truth, the hard, rigorous, take-no-prisoners style of cricket that Australia's been playing is a style of cricket that Philip Hughes himself would have endorsed.
I think that's probably
part of that system, and a lot of people would say, well, you know, good on them,
yep,
for trying hard and doing everything at their disposal to win. And the other thing about the sledging with the Indians is that, from what we can gather about Virat Kohli, he's no angel.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right.
And some of his antics on the field must have been pretty hard to take.
Yep.
So you can't blame the Australians for having a go in return, and perhaps this Pommy commentator, Jonathan Agnew, should butt out, and in particular not go into the debate about Philip Hughes.
Now, Mark, I think you've got your eye on another career, haven't you, as a movie critic? Because I heard you last week reviewing some of the best kids' movies that have been out over the summer, and now you want to talk about a new movie that's just hit the cinemas as well. It's a sequel to Clive Palmer and Jackie Lambie.
Well, this is a real flap doodle, Dumb and Dumber 2. But, John and Gary, you've got to get with the pace. What happened to that little music intro that Paul Murray used to give me for the movie reviews? He developed in the studio there
a musical intro. I'll tell you what, I'll track it down and we'll have it for you next week.
Well, yeah, we can do the movie.
We'll have it next week. Come on, what'd you make of Dumb and Dumber 2?
Well, it's a work of art, because if you got the best creative minds in the world together and said to them, can you make the stupidest movie ever, they could not have done any better than Dumb and Dumber 2. It's an absolute work of art, if you like.
I love the first one.
If you're into political correctness, for goodness sake, don't go and watch it. But if you like raw, rollicking, no-holds-barred humour.
Fart jokes?
Well, not a lot of fart jokes, but there's plenty of orifices on display, that's
yep,
for sure. flapdoodles hanging around.
What's a flapdoodling?
It's all there. It's a work of art. You've got to